You are most welcome. We are now on the briefing by the department. Sure. Deputy Minister? Mr. Van Heerden, you are most welcome. You are 1 minute late, I can see.
Ms. Breitenbach will support any applications for speeding.
You mustn't get caught.
But Chair, the treaty was tabled. I'll just let Mr. Van Heerden is just getting his documents out. I think, as everybody knows, it's a mutual legal assistance treaty and an extradition treaty. Are you ready then?
From the Chief Director of International Legal Relations. In the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. And one of the functions of my unit is to not only process requests for extradition and mutual legal assistance, but also to negotiate treaties where it's necessary. And for that reason, we've negotiated treaties, and I'm referring to extradition and mutual legal assistance in criminal matters treaties with the United Arab Emirates. So if I can start just maybe to give you a little bit of background as to how the process that we followed and the timeline of the negotiations. The first round of negotiations took place in South Africa from 1 to 5 February 2010. And the second round took place in Abu Dhabi from 23 to 26 May 2010. The treaties were then submitted to the state law advisors in the Department of Justice during August 2011 and to the state law advisors in the Department of International Relations and Cooperation during October 2011. Minor amendments were proposed, and we've submitted the amendments to the UAE authorities during January 2012. Various follow-ups were made to determine if the UAE has accepted the proposed amendments, and then on 7 March 2017, the embassy of the UAE indicated that they've approved all amendments, and they've also received the necessary approval to sign the treaties. In the process of requesting approval to sign the treaties, a proposal was made that we also include the provision to cater for cruel, inhumane and degrading treatment, and this proposal was referred to the UAE during May 2017. And then on 22 May 2018, the UAE approved all the additional amendments and also identified 23 to 26 September for Minister Masuta to travel to the UAE to sign the treaties. The President subsequently on 22 September 2018 authorized the Minister to sign the treaties on behalf of the government. The Minister then signed the treaties on 25 September 2018 during his visit to Abu Dhabi. That's the background. If we can then look at the treaties, and I'll start with the extradition treaty. And if we look at Article 1, obligation to extradite, the parties agree to extradite to each other persons who've been charged of or convicted of an extraditable offence. Article 2 deals with central authorities, and for South Africa, the central authority is the Director General Justice and Constitutional Development, and for the UAE, the Ministry of Justice. All communication between the central authorities will also then be channeled through the diplomatic channel. If we then look at extraditable offences, that's Article 3. An extraditable offence is an offence which is punishable under the laws of both parties by deprivation of liberty for a period of at least 1 year or for more severe penalty. This is also to satisfy the dual criminality principle. It must be offence in both countries. Then, whether request for extradition relates to a person sentenced to deprivation of liberty by a court of the requesting state, for any extraditable offence, extradition shall be granted only if a period of at least 6 months of the sentence remains to be served. And it will be an extraditable offence whether or not the laws of the parties place the offence in the same category of offences or describe them by the same terminology. Offences relating to taxation, customs duties, exchange control. In that instance, extradition may be granted despite the fact that the requested party does not impose the same kind of taxes or duties. Then if we look at Article 4, mandatory refusal to extradition. The first one is offence of a political nature. And then we also say that the following offences will not be considered an offence of a political nature. And there we look at assault or murder against the president or head of government, or any of their families, or any member of the Supreme Council of the UAE or their families. Then also terrorism. And then offences, and then a request, where a request is made for the purpose of prosecuting a person on account of that person's race, religion, nationality or political beliefs. An offence under military law, which is not also an offence under criminal law. And also then, where a person has been acquitted or convicted in the requested state for the offence for which extradition is requested, or where the sentence imposed have been fully enforced or is no longer enforceable. And then the last one, where extradition is barred by lapse of time. Then if we look at Article 5, discretionary refusal of extradition, there we say extradition may be refused where the requested party has jurisdiction to prosecute, where the death penalty is a possible sentence, unless assurances is submitted that the death penalty will not be imposed, or if imposed, will not be carried out. Then, where a person has been finally acquitted or convicted in a third state for the same offence, or sentence imposed has been fully enforced or is no longer enforceable, and then we say where on humanitarian grounds such as age and health. And then the last one which we've requested to be included in the treaty is where there's or unless sufficient assurances is provided that the person will not be detained without trial, tortured, were treated in a cruel, inhumane and degrading way. Article 6 deals with nationality, and there we say the party shall not extradite its nationals unless provided by its laws. And the principle there is, if you don't extradite, you must prosecute. Article 7 deals with temporary or deferred extradition. If permitted by the laws of the requested party, a person being prosecuted or serving a sentence may be temporarily surrendered to the requesting party for the purposes of prosecution. Article 8 deals with the rule of specialty. A person who has been extradited shall not be prosecuted, sentenced, detained or re-extradited to a third state for any other offence as the offence for which extradition is requested, unless the requested party consents or the person had the opportunity to leave the territory of the requesting party and did not do so. Then Article 9, where we indicate what should be included in a request. First of all, we say a request shall be in writing and should be submitted through the diplomatic channel. And then the documents that must accompany the request is set out in sub-articles 2 to 4. Article 10 provides that should we receive a request and we need additional information, we can request additional information and a time limit can be set for the submission of that information. Article 11, it's decision, surrender and notifications. The requested party shall promptly notify the requesting party of its decision on the request for extradition, and if refused, reasons must be given for the refusal. If extradition is granted, the person shall be removed within 30 days of notification, but there's also certain exceptions. And then the last point there is the requesting party shall notify the requested party of the result of the criminal proceedings against the extradited person and also the final judgment. Then Article 12, arrest and detention of the person. As soon as a request for extradition is received, the requested party shall arrest and detain the person sought. And that period that the person is in detention should then be remitted from the sentence imposed. In the event Article 13, where there is concurrent requests, if the extradition of the person is concurrently requested by one of the parties and a third state or more for the same offence or different offences, the requested party shall determine to which state it will extradite the person. And there they will consider the seriousness of the offence, the place of commission of the offences, respective dates of the request, and the nationality of the person. Article 14 provides for provisional arrest. In urgent cases, the requesting party may apply for provisional arrest of the person sought pending the presentation of the formal request for extradition. The request for provisional arrest shall be in writing and communicated through Interpol. Then, in sub-article 3, we indicate what information should be included in a request for provisional arrest, and then the person that's provisionally arrested may be discharged from custody if a formal request for this extradition is not received within 60 days from the date of the request for provisional arrest. Article 15 seizure and surrender of property to the extent permitted by the laws of the parties and without prejudice to the rights of third parties, the requested party may seize and surrender to the requesting party property, articles or documents that may be found in the territory of the requested party that is connected with the offence for which extradition is sought. Return of such property may be requested within a fixed period of time. Article 16 deals with transit, and there the parties may authorize transit to its territory of a person surrendered to the other party by a third state. The procedure, Article 17, extradition and provisional arrest shall be governed by the laws of the requested party. In Article 18, we indicate who will be responsible for which expenses, and the requested party shall bear all expenses necessary for the execution of the request, and shall also pay the expenses related to the return of the extradited person to the requested party. In case of extraordinary expenses, the party shall consult. The requested party shall bear all the expenses incurred in its territory for the arrest and detention of the person sought. Article 19, language and translation. Request and supporting documents shall be accompanied by translation if the requested party is South Africa into the English language, and where the requested party is the UAE into the Arabic language. Authentication, Article 20. All requests and supporting documents shall be signed and sealed by the competent authorities and authenticated by the central authority of the requested party, in our case the Director General. Article 21 only deals with the compatibility with other agreements, and there we say the treaty shall not exempt either party from its international obligations. Article 22, disputes arising from the interpretation and implementation of the treaty shall be resolved through the diplomatic channel. Article 23, ratification, entry into force, amendment and termination. The treaty is subject to ratification, and the instruments of ratification shall be exchanged through the diplomatic channel. The treaty shall enter into force 30 days after the exchange of instruments of ratification. The treaty may be amended through mutual consent of the parties, written mutual consent. And then also the treaty may be terminated upon written notice and shall take effect 6 months following the notification. Madam Chair, that's the extradition treaty. I don't know whether you first want to stop here, and then we can move on to mutual legal assistance.
On the first one. And then
thank you so much, Mr. Paliotan and Deputy Minister, for the presentation. However, on Article 2, on Article 2, the issue of central authority here in South Africa being the DG, then in United Arab Emirates being the Minister of Justice. Is it not somehow trying to create, just note,
yes,
to try to create confusion? And also the issue of clarity on the issue of retrospectivity application.
Yes.
Okay, Honorable Swart.
Thank you.
Any other hand?
Thank you, Chair.
Or Honorable Mlauzi. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I my question relates to why it has taken so long. We understand these treaties have been negotiated since 2010. And in this committee on the, in 2016, when we signed a double taxation agreement with the UAE, I expressed my concerns because at that stage we already were dealing with issues around the Guptas. And at that stage already, there could have been a quicker process with both the extradition treaty and the mutual legal assistance treaty. And I was concerned that we had signed a double taxation agreement that many said benefited people and residents of the UAE, and at that stage we had not yet concluded this extradition treaty. So that is a massive concern, and we now know that the allegations are that the Guptas are in the UAE. Should that be so, will it be possible, as the Chair indicated, that once this extradition treaty is approved by Parliament, will it be able to apply retrospectively to possible offences and recovery of funds that the Guptas have obtained? And we know, we've had evidence, I've been sitting on the Eskom inquiry, we've got the Public Protector's report, we've got the Hawks inquiries. Will it be applicable retrospectively? And then I'd thirdly like to know what are the implications of the existing agreement in terms of the United Nations Corruption Convention, which was signed in 2003, which we are signatories to, as well as the UAE, which contains specific rules. Section Article 44 of the UN Corruption Convention sets rules regarding extraditing persons who are accused of corruption, whether this would fit into that. Just for the time being, when we get to the mutual legal assistance, I'd like to ask you whether you're aware of our request that seems to have been apparently, in terms of media, has been referred back by the UAE, and that they've not approved of our request in terms of the mutual legal assistance. Our request for the Guptas extradition in terms of assistance. So I don't know if you're aware of that, but that we'll deal with once you've dealt with the mutual legal assistance. This is a matter of national interest. It's an issue we have raised continually in Parliament, and it is a great concern why it's taken so long. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wanted to ask maybe the Deputy Minister on behalf of the Minister about the complaints of Section 231, 2, and 4 of the Constitution of the Republic, because of tabling the matter of extradition to the National Assembly as soon as possible. Why is the Department delaying to do so when we have a challenge in solving our problem in terms of the state capture? You had the Guptas, more especially, they were putting terms to the state capture that they won't come to North Africa. They want the country state capture commission to come to the neutral country, which is very expensive. Why are we delaying to move in terms of Section 231.2 of the Constitution to table the matter to the National Assembly as soon as possible? And again, it's about Article 4 of United UN Corruption Convention, which was signed by both state parties during 31 October 2003, which we can use it as a department to extradite those people we need to come and assist our legal systems here, because we are at ransom now, because the issue of Guptas, our country now has a financial problems because of them. It's all over. But why is the department is taking a snail pace to comply with Article 44 of UN Corruption Convention and also Section 231, 2 and 4 of the Constitution of the Republic? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Have there been any successful extraditions from the United Emirates before, based on the existing agreements and prior to any kind of formal treaty?
Any other hand? We will respond for now.
If I can perhaps start with Honourable Member Breitenbach, just to indicate we have not yet received or submitted any request for extradition to the United Arab Emirates. If I can just answer the question with regard to why it took so long to get to a point that we could sign the agreements, and I can perhaps, I've got documents in my possession here, that we've on numerous occasions consulted or requested DIRCO to follow up with the UAE embassy, and they've indicated that with each meeting that they had with the UAE ambassador, they requested updates on where and what exactly is going on, why can't they give us the necessary indication. And then perhaps I can also just mention that the new ambassador to the UAE had a meeting with Minister Masuta in March, April, in his office, and there the ambassador also indicates that they are now ready to proceed with the signing and to get the treaty in force as soon as possible. So I think if I can just briefly indicate, I think from the department side, we've tried our best to make sure that the treaties be finalized and signed as soon as possible. And then also just to indicate, as I've said in the background, the treaty was signed on 25 September this year, and the treaty is before the Portfolio Committee on the 7th of November. So I'm not sure whether we can say there was really a delay in, because we must also make a submission to the minister requesting him to submit the treaties to Parliament. I think I'll stop there. Maybe just to also indicate, all request or any crime committed prior to the entry into force of the agreement will also be covered. Yeah, so there won't be any issues. All crimes committed before the entry into force of the treaty is covered by the treaty.
No, I think I've been covered. I mean, the minister signed it, went over to the UAE and signed it on the 25th of September, and it was then tabled, or the letter signed to the speaker and the chairperson of the NCOP a month later, and as Mr. Van Heerden says, there's processes and things. Also, I mean, the minister did tell me that there were some minor amendments that were made when he went over there, so there were sort of, those also obviously had to be factored in. Also, the retrospectivity issue, I mean, it's crimes that are retrospective, not processes. So you can have a law providing for a process of getting information, but that can be used to investigate a crime that happened before. And then it was also then possible to extradite. It is possible to extradite without an extradition treaty. It's obviously a more a longer-term process, but we do extradite to countries for which we don't have an with whom we don't have an extradition treaty.
No, thank you, Chair. I indicated in April of 2016 that this matter was urgent. At the same time, we had signed a double taxation agreement. So I don't understand the delays. I'm not saying it was your department, Justice, but whether it was Durko, it was very clear, no political will to sign this extradition treaty. It is very clear. And we've seen evidence of state capture under the Zuma administration. So I don't accept the explanation that the delay was acceptable. We knew from 2010 that this needed to be signed. 2016, we had a double taxation agreement. They are normally joint double taxation agreements and other agreements. But in 2016, we were told by Durko, whoever came to brief us, that there were one or two minor issues outstanding relating to the extradition treaty. But now it's another 2.5 years. It's just unacceptable. We appreciate now that it's been expedited. The minister has signed on 25th September. And clear, it's a new administration, Chair. So it's a new administration. It's signed quickly. So it's very clear to me that it was conscientiously or consciously delayed under the previous administration. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, look, I know that and why there's media interest in today is not because it's an extradition treaty, but because of the Guptas. But let me just assure Mr. Swart that extradition is possible without an extradition treaty. I think you'd heard from Mr. van Heerden that it takes two countries to make a treaty. Okay. So without casting aspersions on the UAE, but if you listen to his input, it takes two parties. Delays can be on either side. And, you know, there's another country, for example, I won't mention the name, that we're very eager to amend our extradition treaty because there's issues relating to the death penalty. Although that treaty's been finalized, we're having some difficulty in terms of getting that country to commit to signing. But it's two parties to a treaty.
Thank you. And bearing in mind what everybody has just said, why was no application made in terms of the existing possibilities of extradition prior to now? And why was our application sent back?
Well, I think Ms. Breitenbach is talking about the mutual legal assistance agreement, which we're still coming to, but I don't know if you want me to respond to that now, or should we park it? And then, look, as far as there has to be a request from, there has to be an investigation by the police, there has to be a request from the prosecuting authority. So if that hasn't, you'd need to put that question to them. Maybe just one other question Mr. van Heerden didn't respond to was...
Yeah. Are you suggesting that until now the National Prosecuting Authority has not made such a request?
I'm not aware. You'd have to put that question to them. But according to Mr. van Heerden, who processes the applications, he's not aware, as I understand it, but let him speak to himself. Are you talking about mutual legal assistance or extradition?
Either.
Well, mutual legal assistance, if you'd listen to the chair, we're going to come to once we deal
with it. Don't bore me. Deal with it.
No, the chair, I'd ask the chair. I mean, she's the chair, not you. Okay? I'd ask the chair,
and you just
shall I deal with the question of mutual legal assistance now? And the chair said no, park it. You obviously missed it, Honourable Breitenbach. Chair, I have a problem with the Honourable Member shouting boring when I'm giving a reasonable explanation. This is the way she may be used to behaving, but it's not acceptable. I mean, she's now just said shame. I mean, really, I don't know where she thinks she is. But can I appeal to, through you, Chair, to get the honourable member to behave like an honourable member?
Please, let's respect the decorum of this meeting. Let's abide by the rules and do whatever is expected from us in our interactions. We can be as robust as we want to be, but let's take into consideration the rules, what is expected of us as honorable members of this House from both sides. Okay. Now, are we done with the first presentation, honorable members? Then we go to the second one, Mutual Legal Assistance.
Sorry, there was one question that Mr. Finnearden didn't respond
to. Which one?
On the extradition treaty, and that was, I think...
Asked by who?
I think was it Mr. Swart, but it was, why have we got two different bodies? Why is UAE the minister? Why is
okay.
Do you
want to
just respond?
Was it not answered, honorable Swart? Okay, all right. It's me. On central authority, yes. Article 2.
Yes.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, yeah, maybe just to indicate that there's, in some countries, a ministry or department, there's a distinction, or there's no distinction between ministry and department. UAE has nominated the Ministry of Justice, and for the Department of Justice, it's the Director General. So we can say, or for that matter, we could have said the Ministry of Justice of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, but that's how we operate. So for the UAE, they know exactly who they must send the request to, and we know exactly where we must send the request to. Just say again.
Director General.
Ministry of Justice.
And then the apparently honorable front is not, he says it's not answered. Am I correct on the last question?
Yes.
The Director General.
I appreciate the understanding. What you said was that there are two parties involved. But 2 years ago, when we were briefed, we were advised that there were one or two small technicalities that still had to be resolved. And I'm just saying 2.5 years later, it just seems to be an inordinate delay. And that's why I made the assertion that there was not a political will from our side, given the situation of state capture that existed at the time, whether it was with Durko or whoever, but there was a reluctance all around. The second issue relates to investigations, prosecutions. We know the investigations were delayed, the prosecutions were delayed, everything seems to have been delayed, and now suddenly it's all come together, which is helpful. The DM can correctly say that it could have been the United Arab Emirates that delayed it, but I'm just saying, from my perspective, it seems that there were delays from our side. Thank you.
I think you have attempted to answer.
Oh,
thank you.
Well, thank you. Now we're going to switch over to Mutual Legal Assistance. Over to the
other. Okay, well, Mr. Finnearden will take through, maybe just because it's a very technical risk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, if we can then move to mutual legal assistance, and we here refer to mutual legal assistance in criminal matters, Article 1. Article 1 refers to the obligation to provide mutual legal assistance. And there we say, the parties shall provide each other with the widest measures of mutual legal assistance in criminal matters. Article 2, central authorities again, exactly the same as in the extradition treaty. DG Justice, Ministry of Justice, UAE. Article 3 deals with the scope of assistance. the treaty provides for various forms of assistance, such as taking of evidence or statements from persons, providing information, documents, records, and articles of evidence, locating and identifying persons or items, serving documents, or any other form of legal assistance not prohibited by the laws of the requested party. So, although we've listed certain areas of cooperation, there's also provision that we can provide assistance where it's not in conflict with the laws of the requested party. Article 4 deals with refusal of assistance. Although various grounds for refusal exist, the requested party may refuse assistance if the execution of the request would impair its sovereignty, security, public order, or other essential public interests. And then also where a request cannot be executed in the form that the request was submitted, we can set certain conditions for the execution of the request. Article 5 deals with the form and content of the request. Once again, the request shall be made in writing and shall include all information that's contained in sub-article 1 and 2 of Article 5. Language, again, the same as in the extradition treaty. All documents in the case of South Africa, where South Africa is the requested party, shall be accompanied by an English translation, and where the UAE is the requested party, in a copy of or translation in the Arabic language. Authentication, once again, the same as under the extradition treaty. The competent authorities shall seal the documents, and the central authority, our office, the DG, will authenticate all the documents. Article 8 deals with the execution of the request. The competent authorities shall use its best efforts to execute the request and make the necessary arrangements for the representation of the requesting party in the proceedings arising out of a request for assistance. Once again, the request shall be executed in accordance with the laws of the requested party. The requested party may also postpone or make execution of the request subject to conditions if the execution of the request would interfere with an ongoing investigation, prosecution, or proceedings in the requested party. And then the requested party shall keep confidential the request and its contents if so required by the requesting party. Article 9 deals with costs. The requested party shall bear all costs relating to the execution of the request. The requesting party shall pay the fees of experts, translations, transcriptions, allowances, and expenses to travel. And then once again, in the event of expenses of an extraordinary nature, the party shall consult to decide who will pay what. Article 10 deals with limitation of use. The requesting party may be requested not to use any information or evidence obtained in any other proceedings other than described in the request without the consent of the requested party. Article 11, testimony or evidence in the requested party. The person in the requested party from whom evidence is requested shall be compelled to appear and testify or produce items, including documents and records. The requested party shall permit the presence of persons specified in the request during the execution of the request, but this is subject to the national law or the laws of the requested party. If the person asserts a claim of immunity, incapacity, or privilege under the national laws of the requesting party, the requested party shall then notify the requesting party. Evidence produced in the requested party shall be authenticated in accordance with the legal procedures of the requested party. Article 12 deals with records of government agencies. The requested party shall provide the requesting party with copies of publicly available records, including information that are in possession of government departments and agencies. The requested party may provide the requesting party with any records in any form, including documents and information that are in possession of a government department or agency, which are publicly available, unless those material information relate to the national security. The records produced shall be authenticated pursuant to the prescribed legal procedures in the requested party. Article 13, availability of persons to give evidence or assist in investigations in the requesting party. When the requesting party requests that a person in the requested party appear in the territory of the requesting party, the requested party shall invite the person to give evidence or to assist if he or she consents. The requesting party shall not subject the person to the service of process, detention, or any restriction of personal liberty by reason of any offence or conviction that preceded his or her departure from the requested party. The person made available shall not, without his or her consent, be required to give evidence in any proceedings or assist in any investigation other than the proceedings or investigations to which the request relates. If the person had the liberty and the means to leave the territory of the requesting party and did not leave within 30 days after being notified that his or her presence is no longer required, or when the person has left the territory but voluntarily returns within the set period, he or she may be prosecuted, tried, or served a sentence for any offence. Article 14, transfer of persons in custody to give evidence or assist in investigations in the requesting party. A person that's in custody in the requested party may, upon request, be provisionally transferred to the custody of the requesting party for the purpose of giving evidence or assisting in investigations in relation to a criminal matter if the requested party and the person sought consent. Article 50 once again just makes provision for the transit of a person in the territory of South Africa. Article 16, location and identification of persons or articles. If the requested party seeks a location or identity If the requesting party seeks a location or identity of the persons or articles in the territory of the requested party, the requested party shall use its best efforts to ascertain the location and identity subject to the national laws. Service of documents, Article 17. The requested party shall use its best efforts to effect service of any document, and the requested party shall then also return a proof of service. Article 18, search and seizure. The requested party shall, in accordance with its national laws, execute a request for search and seizure and the transfer of any article related to the offence which is subject to the investigation in the requesting party. Article 19, return of articles. The requesting party shall return any article, including documents and records, furnished with in execution of the request, if the requested party so requires. Article 20, assistance in forfeiture proceedings, if one of the parties is aware of proceeds or instrumentalities of offences that are located in the territory of the other party, which may be forfeitable or subject to seizure under the national laws of that party, it may so inform the other party. If the other party has jurisdiction in this regard, it may present this information to its authorities and take any decisions in this regard. Each party shall assist the other with or initiate proceedings to the extent permitted by its respective national laws relating to the forfeiture of proceeds and instrumentalities of offences, restitution and compensation to the victims of the offence. The party that has custody over proceeds or instrumentalities of offences shall dispose of them in accordance with its national laws. Either party may transfer all or part of such assets or the proceeds of their sale to the other party. Compatibility with other agreements, exactly the same as under the extradition treaty, the consultations, Article 22, also exactly the same as in the extradition treaty, and lastly, Article 23, ratification, entry into force, amendment and termination, exactly the same as I've indicated in the extradition treaty. Thanks a lot.
I hope you will note that first question of Honorable Britton Bachner relating to mutual legal assistance. Honorable members, there we are. Honorable Sart, don't you want to be the first because you were said to leave?
I'm just waiting for the chair of public enterprise to
revert.
So I know we need a quorum to vote on this issue as well.
Okay.
So I'm trying to stay as long as I can.
All right.
Thank you,
chair. Okay, the first one will be that one of Honorable Britton Bach. Then the second question, hands on the issue. Okay, I see the hand of Honorable Swart, Honorable Mlauzi.
Sorry, just start though, we have got a quorum and
second. Yes. No, I agree when we started with, yes. 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 Honorable Swart, second hand.
Yes, thank you, Chair. It was in line with the Honorable Breitenbach's question, and it's related to the issue of the mutual legal assistance application that the prosecutors had initiated, but one assumes it would have gone through the department. And our information is that the request was sent to the UAE and then it was sent back, allegedly because it was not drafted according to the UAE protocols. We need more information about that. And then, if I understood you correctly, there have been no extradition applications in terms of Section 44 of the United Nations Convention as well, but just focusing on this mutual legal assistance application that apparently was sent back. We understand there was a meeting of this, and admittedly, a lot of this must be raised with the prosecuting authority, but just as I understand it, the applications go through your office. We can get an understanding of how that operates. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair President. I understand South Africa has a mutual legal assistance in criminal matters in 9 countries. I wanted to check with you which countries are that, and is it the United Arab Emirates part of those countries?
Then, any other hand on the board? For now, you can respond to those 3 questions. The first one,
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, if I can respond, as I've indicated, our office, International Legal Relations, is the arms and legs of the Director General, who is the central authority. So all requests incoming, so that's requests that we receive from foreign states, will come to our office, and then also outgoing requests where the National Prosecuting Authority will, in terms of Section 2.2 of the International Cooperation in Criminal Matters Act, request a letter of request from a magistrate or a judge in chambers. Those requests are also channeled through our office, but it will then only be, submission will be made to the Director General to approve that the request be sent to DIRCO for onward transmission through the diplomatic channel. So yes, I can inform you that a request for various countries, we've received I think about 6 or 8 requests with regard to state capture, of which one was for the UAE. It was submitted. In fact, the DG signed a letter to the DG of DIRCO requesting him to please inform the ambassadors in the countries concerned to, when they receive those requests, that they in person go to the foreign ministry of that country and then to indicate the urgency of the request. I can perhaps also mention that during our visit to Abu Dhabi in September, we've also took a copy of the request, and during discussions we've already highlighted to them that the request is in the pipeline. It will be sent through the diplomatic channels, but we've also provided them with a request, and at that stage there was no indication that they foresee any problems with regard to the execution of the request. During our meeting between the minister and his UAE counterpart, there was also then a invitation for a delegation from the MPA, and I think the Hawks were then also involved, to visit Abu Dhabi and to discuss exactly how, what information is requested and how the request should be executed. I'm aware that this meeting took place. Unfortunately, I don't have any information on the outcome of the meeting, but I'm aware that such a meeting took place. At this stage, I'm not aware of, the request did not yet return via our office, so I can't make any comments on the exact reasons. If the request was returned, what exactly was the reason therefore? So I think that's where I will stop on that one, maybe just to answer the question of the honourable member here, to indicate we've concluded a number of mutual legal assistance agreements. At this stage I can roughly, for instance, China, India, Canada, USA, France, and then of course the SADC Protocol on Mutual Legal Assistance. And yes, this exercise is there to get a treaty with the UAE also in place. Not yet. And I think I'll stop there.
Okay, any follow-up on the
remember? I want to stay as long as I can, and so that we've got a quorum. Can I just have your guidance, Chair? We need to vote on this still, is that right?
Okay, so let's try and finalize it as quickly as possible. But I just wanted to say, I'm just trying to understand this delay, not the delay now with the response from the UAE, Mr. van Heerden. The application goes via your office to United Arab Emirates, then it comes back if there's a delay. So would you be the first person to know if there's a delay or if there was a rejection of that? I just need that understanding. And then this meeting where you were in the UAE and they indicated that there would be a meeting with the Hawks and the MPA, was that in the UAE, and did that meeting take place, and you indicated you were not present, but just give me clarity on that meeting. When was it, if possible, roundabout?
Can I, just the first question was, okay, yes. As I've indicated, all these requests are submitted through the diplomatic channel. So we will receive the request from the MPA. We will make a submission to the DG for approval that we submit the request to DERCO. DERCO will then forward the request to our mission in Abu Dhabi. And from there it will go to the foreign minister, the UAE foreign ministry. The foreign ministry will send it to the Ministry of Justice. And the request will be returned in the same way back to us. So unfortunately, there's quite a few other people that must, the request must go through before it will reach our office. And then the second question, yes, the meeting took place. I can't now give you the exact dates, but I would say about 3 weeks ago. And it was a delegation comprising prosecutor from the National Prosecuting Authority and investigating officers from the Hawks.
Don't know. The issue of which appeared on City Press, was it cleared?
Well,
or on NPA? Is
that's
he trying
what
to address?
Mr. Finnierton has responded to. It's something I think to the. I'm sure it will formally come through him. I think it's something sort of leaked to the media. I did speak to the NDPP informally, and again, I think it should be something that's taken up with them. He had indicated that it was there were some problems with the translation, Arabic translation of the documents, that were the cause of the problems. I think it needs to be got from them. The detail, but I think Mr. Finnierton has answered it. There hasn't been a formal return as yet.
Okay, any other
matter in relation to the issue?
Members? Honorable members? Okay. Your hand is above the
report. Move to accept, Chair.
I'm sorry. Okay, two presentations, honorable members. Let's start with the first one. The first one, any mover? Honorable Sart? My apologies. Any mover for adoption? Honorable Sart? On record, Honorable Sart, move.
I move to accept, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Seconder, Honorable Skotana, you on record?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I second.
Okay. Let's see hands. Those who are for. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yes. 8 hands. All of us unanimously so. The second document, mutual legal assistance, Honorable Sort.
Move to accept the second as
okay,
well.
Okay, any seconder? Honorable Mlauzi and Honorable Skosana on record, please.
I second.
Okay. Let's see the hands of those who are for. Okay, thank you so much. 8 again. Thank you, Honorable Members. Okay. Let's come to the second issue, duly adopted by the Honorable Committee members, all two. Thank you so much. Then let's go to the issue of cyber crime, which was we dealt with in the report. Yesterday we adopted the we were briefed and accordingly.
Chair, maybe if I can assist. The committee yesterday adopted the bill. It's then just the report, which I think has been forwarded, was done by the committee section or Ms. Silkstone. Yeah.
Okay. The ones we have adopted, ne? which were presented today. We'll request Bonani, because you say it will only be one paragraph. Yeah, it's also there. You have it, ne? On the documents we have been dealing with. Which is that with resolution? The National Assembly approved. It will be. It won't be National Assembly.
Can I suggest?
It needs to be the committee.
Yes.
Yes.
Can I suggest that that is what the members voted on?
Oh.
That they approve. So that I would suggest they've already voted on.
All right.
Okay.
That's what I was saying, that it should be on record, so that when it is ATC, we don't query procedures and processes. Okay. Thank you very much. Let's go on draft program as discussed last week.
No. The report on the committee section wanted this one page report adopted.
Yes, we'll do this immediately. This has been.
No, he
said he's waiting for the chairperson. For the chairperson of public interpreters. Yes. Yes. So we are done. Okay. There you are. Before us, we have two documents, is the report and the draft program, as agreed upon. Now, on the report of the cyber bill, yesterday, as advised, yes, we adopted the bill. Can we now, having looked at this report as a committee, then have a mover for adoption of this cyber bill, cyber security bill, cyber crime? Honorable Skosana?
No, thanks, Honorable Acting Chair. I move for the adoption of the report.
Okay. Honorable Mbumlwana, you are welcome. Yes, on record, please.
I raised second.
Okay, let's see those who are for cyber security. Oh, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 hands. Okay, those who, Honorable Sarsi said he is abstaining, and then the two members, I think it's yesterday's position of reporting back to their caucus.
Same, Chair, so it's not necessarily abstain. That I'm voting again.
Reserved, yeah. Sorry. Yes. Honorable?
We reserve our position on
yes.
The caucus.
Okay. 7, then note. Thank you very much. Let's finalize. The last one is our draft program. I hope each and every member has got. And then what is outstanding here is the high-level panel, and then the traditional costs bill report, and the third one. Yeah, I think it's high-level panel, Bonani and Christine, and the traditional cost bill report. Any other item, honorable members, on our draft report? And the yes. Yes. Yes, I think we're gonna.
Okay, I'll wait.
No, the program, is it the report? No,
program.
The program. and also we're proposing, as per last week, that the National Department of Health come to brief the committee on state liability. No, we're not coming to the date now.
Okay. And
there was also a request to allow for other written submissions. Yes. And then any other issue? Let's go. Honorable Mbumlwana is not having a coffee, Bonani.
Okay.
terribly sorry, Madam Chair, but I have to leave now. Mr. Warren has to leave with Mr. Swan, now with our position.
All right. Okay.
We're really just because I'm trying to catch.
All right. No, we just want, we'll adopt it maybe next week or so. We just wanted items. You can go back to your committee. Thank you so much. Honorable sir. Thank you.
I just then, next week, I would presume that's going to change then, the deliberations. We're going to have a joint meeting with health. And we're going to invite other written submissions. And so that then would fall away the Wednesday, 14th of November, the finalization. It would be further consideration of that bill, I presume. I'm not sure. I need your guidance there. Because obviously if we're going to invite further written submissions...
No, we can't finalize.
We cannot.
Yes,
so
we
thank
cannot.
You, Chair. I'm in
yes.
a total agreement
no,
with that.
No, we can't finalize.
You heard the sentiments
this was a draft.
Well. Yes, and you heard the sentiments as well in the public hearing.
Yes.
So I suggest we delete that finalisation of state liability bill on the 14th of November.
That's why we if we are in agreement, the National Department and other provincial departments of health should come next week.
If they can, if they're available.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then other written submissions. Yes. But we give let's say.
2 weeks or how much?
Let's say 7 days.
7 days.
We don't have lots of time.
Will you issue a
let's say if it's issued today. If what are you going to do? Yeah, it's a media statement because
media statement.
Advertising going to be very expensive.
No, media statement.
Yes,
is
media
fine.
Statement. Yeah. Let's say 7 days. If it's done today, so it means by next week, Wednesday, everything will be fine.
Next week.
Yeah. If it's done today.
By next
yes.
week.
Okay.
And then we will have deliberations and we will need to know, I know this is not final, but you'll need to give us an indication when we can meet with the National Health Portfolio.
We're proposed.
Oh, we're going to have a joint meeting
right.
with them. That's
joint
very important.
Meeting,
eh? Yeah.
No. I'll talk to the, we'll request the
with
the
health,
chairperson.
With health
yes.
committee, because
yes.
there are a lot of health issues
well,
that I don't understand, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you for your indulgence on that.
Okay. And then, let's check this. And then next week, is this the still Child Justice Amendment Bill? Yes. Responses? Public hearing?
Can we not bring that forward, Chair? I mean,
bring the finalisation of the Child Justice Amendment Act earlier.
Where is it?
It's on 20 November. You see,
he's talking about finalisation.
Because we're not going to finalise. You need at least a week for written submissions. So until we get that, we're not going to be able to deliberate on state liability. So should we not exchange finalisation of Child Justice Act for next week and we put the deliberations on the following week? It's just a suggestion of state liability bill. Something just to consider, Chair.
Where are we, Honourable?
Yeah,
I'm a bit lost.
I'm sorry, I was given this document.
Check the date. Talk about the date. The date.
I'm
okay.
talking about 20th November, we've got finalisation of Child Justice Amendment Act.
No.
But we've got 13 November deliberations. Now, if we're going to issue a request for written submissions, we're only going to get them by next Wednesday. That's 1 week. I'm saying we should exchange the two. We should put Child Justice next week and state liability the following week.
Okay. Mm.
We could. There's nothing outstanding really on Child Justice.
Next week.
Is it? So we could do Child Justice next week, and then state liability the following week.
Okay.
Honorable Skhosana? Yeah, Chair, I see that on the program, for instance, today is the 7th. It says we're dealing with public hearing on Child Justice Amendment Bill and dealing with responses to submission on the State Liability Amendment Bill. And officially, that's not what we're dealing with today. Now, if you shift
this
to next week,
to
it means
as draft.
It means all the days will then be affected.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. All the dates must then move backward. Yeah, I think that's what must happen.
Yes. Because if you look at Tuesday 6, that's what we dealt with, item A and B. We dealt with today, the 7th, isn't it? Of course, it, there will be a change of days, like the. So, Vonan, you got it, ne? And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So next Tuesday we're going to do public hearings on Child Justice Amendment Bill. That should have been done today.
Yeah.
That's
the 13th.
The 13th.
Yes.
And may I suggest then that we hold, and then we can deliberate the following day as Wednesday 14 November, as it is on my program. It says Deliberations Child Justice Amendment Bill. The next day. And then we hold over state liability to the following week.
Okay.
That's a suggestion.
There we are, honourable members. I think that it doesn't make you any harm. Mm.
Members, on the Child Justice Bill, we only received two submissions. So I think having a public hearing for just two to listen to two would be maybe using our time not in an effective way. So we then, I think a suggestion would therefore be if we would share the submissions with members and share them with the department, then next week Tuesday the department will just have to respond to those, then we deliberate. Instead of hearing. So we send them to members, then we send them to the department, then next week Tuesday we're deliberating. And we'll be having, on, if you check on the program, we'll be dealing with the second item, which is the responses to submission on the Child Justice Act, without having the hearings. Because I don't think it will be, unless there's no one here, an indication wants to come as well. So let's deal with the responses immediately, we deliberate and agree with the proposed or in the way forward. Then the next day, we can also again deliberate to maybe to finalize it, saying maybe we can go through it close by close, if possible, the next day.
Okay. On the 14th.
On.
Okay. Not that for the guidance. Okay. So it means go to the 14th, not the 15th. No, necessary adjustments will be made, and then I think secretary will send us. Yeah. So the public protector one, it will be the 21st. Yes. It will be the only one for that day, whole day. Okay. And then our legacy report Tuesday. Then there is a proposal. This.
There are a number of constitutional court judgments that will probably in the next parliament affect our work. But we just need to then discuss and then give instructions to our legal department so they can start going ahead in terms of preparing committee bills, or whether we want the department to take those up.
I agree with your proposal, Chair, to incorporate the judgment in the legacy report. I also agree, I like the suggestion of a meeting with the Chief Justice if he's available. If it is on, could I ask our researchers to check? There were one or two outstanding issues from our last meeting, particularly one of the judges' president raised an issue that we were going to get back to him about. And I, for the life of me, I cannot remember, but Advocate Umpawana, that chaired that last meeting, we were all in a difficult position because you said, the judge president said, you haven't reverted to me on that issue, and we said we would get back to him, and it could come up again if it's somewhere in the records. And so I think this is a very important meeting as well, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Can you assist, please? There is a draft report from that meeting. I think they're asking us as well. I think the office actually sent us recordings of the meeting.
And again, honourable members, we have received Judicial Service Commission report. I hope you are busy going through that. About 16 pages. Yeah, so to say. All right. No, thanks so much.
Okay, thank you so much. A final program will come before the conclusion. I hope that this is the way to adopt the same.
We need to adopt the same report. For now, I think we are done with our meeting. We'll meet next week. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
All right.